Hey everyone, another Stock Talk episode here on the KE Report. I'm your host, Corey Fleck, and I am joined again by Quentin Henny, geologist, private investor, and geologic advisor to Crestcat Capital. Now, this is a continuation of this new series that I have with Quentin, where all of you are sending me stocks that you want Quentin's comments on, mostly on an exploration front, but judging by all the emails I have gotten, we're going to be covering a wide range of companies as we progress through Stock Talk with a segment this week. We're even going to follow up with another segment next week and probably keep that routine going on at least a once every 2 week segment where we dive into resource stocks that you are interested in. Four stocks being featured this week, starting with Lion One Metals, Newfound Gold, Aftermath Silver, and Abra Silver. Quentin, let's get into Stock Talk then, starting with Lion One Metals, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LIO and on the OTCQX under the symbol LOMLF. Look, I get a lot of questions about Lion One because I've covered them a lot on the show, and a lot of people are wondering about the mine ramp up because you're more on the exploration side here. I do want to talk about the exploration focus of the company, one being around the resource at Tuvatu. Can that be extended? Let's start there. What do you think about exploration potential around the known resource?
Well, look, at Tuvatu, it's clear there's a lot more drilling that's going to need to be done over the next few years. There's some very good targets, albeit some of these things are early stage. You know, if you look at some of the drill success that was happened late last year, 2023, there's a lot of new zones that need to be followed up, including this new porphyry discovery. The Tuvatu mineralization, that's exposed inside the mine is of one type. Okay, we'll call it more or less gold only mineralization. It's the main focus of the current experimental mine that they have in place, and so forth. But then there's this porphyry aspect too, which seems to be more like a center of gravity somewhere north of the Tuvatu resource. And what that might look like is going to be interesting. Like there's definitely a copper gold flavor in that mineralization. Gold's still there, but there is definitely a very high grade copper in places. So, it could unfold in a very interesting way. We see similar systems to this elsewhere in the world. Like say K92 has a significant copper component, and they are an alkaline gold system like Tuvatu.
So how would you like to see the company test this new copper area? Because this was just released to the market at the beginning of March.
First and foremost, the market's been tough, okay? And it's not been easy to secure capital, especially when you're trying to ramp up a mine like this. The company did raise money not too long ago, I think about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And the goal of that is to get ramped up, okay? They've been working on the experimental mine level for about 6 or 7 months now. I think they actually poured their first gold, if I remember right, sometime back in October of last year. And that was at, a tonnage of about 300 tons a day. And a lot of that, mining was actually a developmental, drifting and stuff like this. I think now they're into the more of the stoping, proper production stopes and whatnot. But they also want to get it ramped up to 500 tons per day. And that includes, putting a ramp down to the 500 zone, the high grade portion of the system at a little bit deeper level. All right, so I'd like to see the company focus like a laser on getting that working. Everything needs to get working so they get cash flow positive and so forth, or get a mine that will say is self-sustaining. All right, because if they do that, then that's when you go and test the rest of this. You actually, have a lot of opportunity then to use cash flow to test new targets, including this porphyry, and see if you can't find, the future of the mine itself, but also maybe new discoveries.
Oh, I'm following up with the company too, just so everyone knows, to try to get an update on that mine ramp up, but that I know just takes some time to get that organized. But then Quentin, let's take this a step further. Say that mine is up and running and they are generating cash flow from it, and then they go and test this copper porphyry target. what kind of a story does it change into if they do start to find something copper-wise in terms of maybe an acquiring company or then being a gold miner with a larger copper potential?
Well, one of the most intriguing things about the copper mineralization they've encountered so far in the Navalawa caldera, okay, so this is a big volcanic edifice. It's about 7 kilometers across, say. But the copper mineralization they've hit so far, there's some very, very high grades in places. And that's both copper and gold combined. All right. So, you know, the last time I was in Fiji was immediately prior to COVID. There was some mineralization exposed. The creek level was very low at that time. So there was mineralization exposed in some veins in the creek bottom. I remember picking up samples that were basically solid, you know, copper mineralization, like solid chalcopyrite, bornite, and other copper minerals. And wind assay, those things came back crazy high grade, you know, 10 or tens of percent copper, as well as, you know, tens of grams of gold per ton. So there's a flavor of very high grade mineralization here. Now, what does that mean? Okay, well, there are systems like this, alkaline gold systems around the world we can point to that have that have generated some very high grade copper gold deposits. Okay, and the best example I can point to that reminds me of what we're seeing at Navalawa is the Ridgeway deposit in Australia. It's in New South Wales. It's near the Cadia mining operation. And Ridgeway was a copper gold discovery in an alkaline or associated with an alkaline porphyry. It was made back in the 1990s. I think the actual discovery hole was 95 or thereabouts, 1995, we'll call it. And the discovery was a very compact, like what we call a cupola, or basically a kind of a cone-shaped body of high-grade copper gold that overlaid porphyry, a fairly narrow, you know, like tightly confined porphyry. But because it was confined like that, it created just exceptionally high-grade mineralization. And this system that they found reminds me of Ridgeway. So with luck, maybe here at Lion One, they will find an analog to the Ridgeway deposit. I think Ridgeway ended up producing, say, around 3 or 4 million ounces of gold and then a substantial amount of copper as well.
Let's move on to newfound gold, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol NFG and on the NYSE American under a symbol NFGC. Now, Newfound has really been a leader in exploration in Newfoundland. The company is just under $1 billion Canadian market cap. A lot of drilling success at the Queensway project, but most recently, earlier this week, announced a deal to acquire the Kingsway project from Labrador Gold. $20 million Canadian worth of shares. Labrador Gold did right around 100,000 meters of drilling at this Kingsway project. What do you think about this land consolidation play now that Newfound Gold has?
Well, I guess the first thing I would say is a deal like this is the product of a very depressed market. I mean, that's, you know, it is in a sense highway robbery that the Newfound has managed to pick up the entire Kingsway project for what is a dollar sum that's a bit less than I think what they spent drilling those 100,000 meters. Okay, so it's what I would call a good deal. It's a natural fit for the Queensway property. It's a natural continuation of the Appleton Fault Corridor. And, you know, I guess what I would point to, like everybody, you know, who's invested in Newfound wants to know where the upside is. Well, guess what? You know, the team at Newfound knows this area, knows the systems very well, and I'm sure that they can be very effective at drilling the Kingsway property, making more discoveries similar to what they found on the Queensway property. I think the geology, you know, pretends that it goes straight up across the border. I don't see any problem with that. Maybe a little bit different change in geometries of the veins and stuff, but, you know, with luck, Newfound will go in there and make more high-grade discoveries that will add to its already very sizable discovery at Queensway.
Now, what about at Queensway? There's a number of different discovery areas on that project that the company continues to aggressively drill out. What are some of your favorite? Which ones do you think have the best potential just to keep on delivering?
Well, look, I don't really see I know what you're saying about the different deposit names and so forth, and it's a bit arbitrary to me to say, oh, the one deposit leaves off here and comes another deposit. It's really all one big deposit, and that's fine. I mean, you know, it's just a bunch of structures. You know, the company's done a great job with the technical work. They've drilled very systematically. They've turned the drills around, drilled different angles, and they have more, you know, say more holistically, you know, fleshed out exactly what's there. Like they have a really good model now of the veins, vein sets and stuff. They're seeing mineralization on both sides of the Appleton Fault Corridor. You know, these are important discoveries that the mineralization is way more extensive than initially thought. I mean, if you just think back 2 or 3 years ago when, you know, this main story was the Keats Zone. I mean, think about it. You know, that was the main zone. And then, you know, then we had Lotto and so forth. Like, it's just unfolded gradually over time. I think if I had to say what's intriguing to me about the mineralization they've hit in most recently, well, the stuff on the west side of the fault zone, there's a lot, like the West Keats and stuff, there's a lot of flat structures or very low angle structures in there at shallow depth. Okay, you know, imagine having a 5 meter wide structure dipping at 20 degrees that basically can be accessed from an open pit. That's incredible. You know, there's a lot of pitable material at the entire Queensway project now. Okay, like, if you look back a few years ago, the thought was, okay, this is going to, you know, it's great at surface, but it's going to go deeper and deeper and deeper quick. It hasn't. I mean, it's also, you know, got potential at depth. But what they found is there's a lot more at surface than anybody ever dreamed of. Okay? Like there's veins going every which way. So, yeah, you know, I guess what I would say is that shallow potential for a very large scale, very high grade open pit is truly unique in the gold space these days. I can't think of anything else out there that could deliver a super high grade open pitable gold system, a new mine.
Okay, that's interesting. Closer to surface, something to keep an eye on. But what about all this seismic data that was just completed? That gives them more information about going deeper. So in terms of growth, what do you like about, or do you like, the depth potential now with this seismic data?
Well, okay, so to put it in context, like at Fosterville, all right, the Swan Zone the Swan Zone is where most of the high grade is, but other chutes also extended depth. But they went down, you know, 900 meters plus, okay, vertically below surface, all right? So we, you know, orogenic systems we know very well, okay? They go down to the bowels of the earth, more or less, many of them, all right? And this is epizonal system. So we're kind of towards the tippy top of the thing. In other words, we have all the runway below us. I have very little doubt that 20 years from now, people are going to be drilling holes 900 meters below surface, kind of like they did at Fosterville, and finding more and more and more high grade. Okay. The seismic clearly shows there are literally dozens and dozens of structures very similar in nature to the ones they've already drilled, but that extend or even emerge at depth. Like some of these don't come up to surface. There are many, many new structures to test at depth, even laterally to the ones that they've drilled to date. You know, so near surface, there's even more structures to test. This thing is wide open in every respect, okay? It's going to be a gold camp, and that's the way people need to think about it. I think that whoever ends up operating a mine here, whether it's Newfound or, you know, a major mining company coming in and buying them, I think they're going to have a really good home that generates, a tier one asset for 20 plus years. That's the way I see it.
That ties perfectly into its $1 billion market cap then, Quentin. What type of drilling, what type of news do you think needs to happen to grow this market cap even higher?
Well, obviously, we need to see, you know, interest in the gold space come back. It's starting to come back, you know, tepidly hopeful that everything's turning around here. But is that really going to drive, you know, an increased share price? I think certainly we see M&A start to pop up here soon. That could have a pretty big impact on the share price, like in the shorter term. Let's say we see a flurry of M&A over the next few months as the gold price picks up. Yes, Newfound would be one of the first companies to benefit from that. But what's really going to drive the value of this project or this asset, in my view, is production. Okay. Getting a deposit like this into production is absolutely critical. Now, at Fosterville, the mine was in an operating mine. They had, they've been operating there for something like 20 years or so, and they had produced a little over 1 million ounces around the time they hit the high grade. Okay, so they had the infrastructure, they were in production, and they hit the high grade, and then it became a wonderful story. Why? Because the gold that was produced was at such low cost. It was insane. Okay. Like they were producing an ounce of gold for say $400 US. That makes a lot of money. Okay. That translates very strong cash flow. And then the cash flow is, you know, used to re-rate. Like people see, okay, this thing's kicking out, you know, $600 million a year. Hey, you know, let's use a multiple of 12. Boom, all of a sudden you got a, you know, $7 or $8 billion company. Okay, like that's the story of Fosterville. Now, here at Newfound, imagine 2-3 years from now, they have a mine operating. And let's say it's producing 250,000-300,000 ounces even of gold. And it's producing it at $400 an ounce U.S. Okay, that thing's like, gold's 2,400, guys. That's $2,000 an ounce. I mean, this is the kind of mine that can mint money, really. I mean, just print money. All right. So this thing could kick out free cash flow like they saw at Fosterville back in the day. You know, $600-700 million annually. Sure, no problem. What would that result in? A very, very significant increase in valuation compared to its current market cap.
All right, let's move on to Aftermath Silver. Trade on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol AAG and on the OTCQX under the symbol AAGFF. This is a about $61 million market cap company. It's silver exploration in Chile and Peru. Flagship asset being in Peru. Give us a little overview in terms of what you think the potential is here of exploration growing on the resource already at the Peru asset.
Sure. This is Baranguela is the asset in Peru. It's down in southern Peru, kind of in the Puno region. I know the region pretty well. I've done some work down there a few years ago. We had a project not too far away. Look, Baranguela is basically a carbonate replacement deposit. So you have a bunch of limestones that have been attacked by hydrothermal fluids, probably associated with a porphyry, that have basically fed minerals into that limestone, replaced the limestone, which is calcium carbonate, with other minerals. And in this case, it includes things like massive manganese carbonates. Manganese is a, you know, a ferroalloy metal. It's also used in batteries. But it's very common to see manganese replacing limestone or be associated with porphyry deposits that come up in limestone, where you get a lot of fluids coming out of the porphyry and replacing the limestone beds. Okay, so manganese, big component of this system. There is also a bit of copper and silver. The copper, of course, is, you know, a direct affinity with the porphyry itself. And then the silver is, because this is a relatively high level in the system, I think is, you know, kind of the epithermal expression of this porphyry. Look, it's a big system. And look, I don't want to, you know, complicate things too much for people, but you know, when you start to mishmash a bunch of metals together, especially with manganese, they become metallurgically challenging. Okay, manganese, it prevents the direct use of cyanide and some other techniques that we would use to normally recover silver, for example. Okay, so you have to go out of your way and find other metallurgical techniques to process this type of mineralization. And in this case, Aftermath Silver has done a lot of work here recently, recognizing that there is a metallurgical challenge. They've done a lot of work recently to show that they can get a recovery of manganese, but also the silver and the copper using sulfuric acid. So basically a hydrometallurgical approach where they dissolve the metals of interest in acid, in this case, and then re-precipitate the metals out. Okay, so the manganese, they precipitate out as a sulfate, and that's, you know, a saleable product. And then the copper and the silver, well, the silver is plated out, I think, in a Merrill-Crowe scenario, so it's a type of plant that recovers silver out of solutions. And then the copper, I believe, is electrolytically refined out of the solutions of sulfuric acid as well. Okay, now, in my view, very interesting. That's a lot of chemistry, I guess is the best way to put it. It's not necessarily commonplace to see a mine and operation built of that type. Okay, so this is a bit on the cutting edge of things. I hope the company can sort it out and make a productive mine here. But it is, you know, it is a metallurgical challenge. It's going to require some engineering and you know, permitting and some other aspects. Like how do you get sulfuric acid way up in the high mountains of southern Peru? You know, like there's some challenges here. Okay, that's it, pure and simple. Look, they have Chaquicoyo in Chile and in Chechenel as well. Those are low sulfidation vein systems. They're silver gold. Those are also interesting. I don't know as much about those assets. Didn't work down in that part of the country, but I do know some of the epithermal vein systems in northern Chile. And I guess what I would say is, you know, those are going to take some exploration. There is a resource right now, Chaquicoyo, I think on the order of, you know, 40, 50 million ounces of silver, as well as maybe a few tens of thousands of ounces of gold. But, you know, that's probably not quite enough to support the PEA and, you know, the economic work that needs to be done to see how it can be advanced. But they do look like interesting projects, and I certainly wish the company well.
Okay, one quick follow-up on that Berlinguela project. Then the company already has a pretty large resource there, over 100 million ounces silver in the M&I category, over 500 million pounds of copper in the M&I category. I realize, look, the met testing, the metallurgical work, that could be a concern here. What about resource growth potential, though? Do you see that being a driver for the story?
Look, they have in their presentations and stuff and news releases some pretty good maps that show the areas that they've drilled. You know, and you know, my recollection of that country down there is, it's kind of low, or, well, it's high elevation, but it's rolling hills, like not like super steep hills. They're kind of rolling and grassy and stuff, but there's a heck of a lot of outcrop. In other words, there's not a lot of room to hide. I would say that in general, the upper part of the system here, being the manganese silver copper mineralization, has probably been tested fairly thoroughly, like the extent of it is my bet. Now, is there a porphyry at depth? I wouldn't doubt there's something more to test there. And, you know, whether the company has any desire to pursue something like that, I don't know. I haven't followed the company closely enough to know if they would chase, say, a porphyry at depth. But I would say the near surface part of this system is probably drilled out by and large.
Okay, let's move on to Abra Silver. It's traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol ABRA and on the OTCQX under the symbol ABBRF. This is a more advanced silver company. The Diablillos project already has a PFS release that came in at US $500 million NPV. Market cap of this company, Canadian, is in the about $226 million range. They have a large resource, 258 million silver equivalent ounces in M&I categories. What do you think about resource growth potential here? Or is this turning more into a development play in your eyes?
Definitely turning into a development play. And I think the news that we saw, you know, with Kinross taking an interest in Abra shows that it's caught the attention of major mining. In this case, a gold company, which is really interesting. I mean, think about that. That speaks volumes. But, you know, Kinross, they're good miners. I don't think the fact that it's silver dominant versus gold is that big of an issue. But, you know, they're clearly interested in it because it is an advanced stage project. And it's big. It's a big silver oxide system. The focus that they have at this point is developing an open pit oxide silver gold mine. And it's, you know, it's got a pretty healthy reserve base here. I mean, it's something that's going to generate a mine that, say, is in the top 10, you know, silver producers on an annual basis. That's wonderful. Okay, this is a way I like to see a project go like this. You know, it's no need to drill out, you know, 5 billion ounces. You know, let's find a happy number and build a mine. So, I think they have, if memory serves, I think they have somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 or 15 years defined in the current mine life. With all deposits, I'm sure they'll find some more. Okay. There's, pretty good geophysical data and other data that suggests there's more extensions of the system. Not sure that they're looking to go chase more and more when the market's tough and, they don't want to dilute the story too much. So I think right now they've shifted gears and they're focused on building a mine out of this. The first 5 years of production is on the order of just under 15 million ounces of silver. I think, like the Silver Institute numbers came out, I think it was last week. And if memory serves, I think that would place them in the neighborhood of maybe fifth or sixth on that list. Okay, people will probably check up on it on their own and tell me I'm wrong. But I think that would make this as somewhere around the fifth or sixth largest individual silver mine in the world. And that doesn't include the gold component as well. There's a bit of a gold kicker with this that if you convert to silver equivalencies, it would bump that number up further. It's a good story. Again, like geologically, I think it's probably associated with the porphyry. In this case, this is not a manganiferous. It doesn't have manganese and stuff like that. The metallurgy, I've reviewed this pretty closely a couple of years ago. The metallurgy looks pretty good. So in terms of leachability and stuff, I think this is going to have a very good outcome. But I do think that at depth, you could, I'm not saying promises, but there could be something like a phyllo type porphyry driving this thing, whether it's shallow enough that it could present itself as a target. That's probably debatable, but it just makes, if you look at phyllo, for example, there's this kind of blanket like silver deposit over the top of the porphyry, and as they chase it down, boom, they find the porphyry. Well, who's to say you couldn't do something like that here? I don't know.
So when I hear porphyry, that to me talks big, massive mines, large-scale mining. We recently had the Jack Zone. That was being drilled out that was yielding them higher grade here. So how would you balance out from an investment perspective here, potentially drilling some of these other zones, even growing that Jack Zone that is of a higher grade, or going massive with a porphyry play, drilling deep for a porphyry?
Look, it's a good philosophical debate. Obviously you want to create value through exploration. Are the shareholders out there going to reward somebody for spending, a few million bucks in a tough market to go chase a deep porphyry right now? Oh, maybe. I don't know. But at the same time, people could say, well, you're diluting the company and you're basically, spoiling an already good story. You're in the form of a shallow deposit. Why go chase that right now? And there's logic to that too. And I would say the company's chosen the right path. I don't think they need to go chasing that deep porphyry. I'm not saying that it probably isn't there. I think there's something down there, but I don't think they need to go chasing it straight up right now. Get a mine built, get cash flow, poke some holes down maybe in a few years. Now, the one caveat I would say though, I've looked at the geophysical data around this Jack Zone, and there do seem to be natural extensions of it. I remember looking at this, I think 2 years ago when they were first kind of, and the Jack Zone is kind of down low, it's down in the valley and kind of blind, it's buried. So, I remember them hitting some pretty specky holes down here, like nice thick blanket-like mineralization and pretty high grade and yada yada, it's looking pretty good. My recollection is there's some there's geophysical extensions that go way beyond the area that they've drilled. Now, would that be worth pursuing a bit? Probably, that might. I think finding more shallow stuff. Now, you could wait until you got a mine built, though, too. Build a mine, get cash flow. Don't dilute anymore. Build a mine, go, and then maybe you drill all that stuff later.
All right, Quentin, I've taken up enough of your time this week. We should say that none of this is investment advice. I know how much our audience likes when we talk about specific stocks, and Quentin is nice enough to share his thoughts on these stocks, all of which ones that you have sent in. please keep sending the stocks in to me. My email address is fleck@kereport.com. Quentin and I will be back next week with another segment of Stock Talk, diving into four other companies that you have all sent me. I hope you all enjoyed this segment, and Quentin, I really do appreciate you taking time and sharing your thoughts on all of the companies.